6000 for 10,000.
270, climb to 12,000, South 1063.
I think you're bringing up some good points about the whole Detorts effect and some of these young guys and some of these players and how the front office is telling us, oh, this is a great, great locker room. These guys love each other. They'll go through a wall for each other. They'll do everything. And it's like the day after you get eliminated, who's out at the Phillies game? And listen, it is what it is. And players are allowed to go out and have lives. However, when you start posting these things on social media, that tells me it's like, you really don't give a fuck. You don't care. You just got eliminated and you're at a Phillies game. And who is it? Two guys that are under the microscope from the fan base and from the coach. Joel Farabee, Morgan Frost. I don't know if that's a coincidence. Like, I don't know it's a coincidence when I didn't hear the entire exit interview. Sean Couturier sounded like a fucking like know-nothing captain anyway. But at John Tortorella's exit interview at the end of the season, press conference, he said that he made it perfectly clear. He spoke to Sean Couturier. Mm-hmm. And doesn't know what Couturier was talking about when he was speaking to you guys, a.k.a. the media. But he absolutely went and talked to him. And why wouldn't he talk to that guy, a veteran in the league, and tell him why he wasn't playing? He did. So there's two different stories there. There's Sean Couturier saying, I have no idea why I was benched. And then there's John Tortorella saying, he knows damn well why he was benched because I spoke to him about it. And he's just got nothing between his fucking ears. Because he didn't understand what the fuck I was saying to him or whatever. But it's two different versions of that story. And I'm going to be real interested to see if that storyline continues next season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was an interesting article that Kevin Kurz had just came out in The Athletic about all of the things that you just mentioned, Manny, with respect to the Sean Couturier benching and the lack of communication. Some really kind of bizarre quotes in here. Where Torts said one of these, he goes, now, whether the player agrees with it or not, and Sean didn't, that's what I love about him. He didn't. He disagreed. And we just talked on Thursday and we disagreed on a lot of stuff. That's what I love about him. He's willing to say what's on his mind. That's how our relationship is going to grow. And it's like, Okay, so you're happy that the player vehemently disagrees with you. What if the player says, hey, coach, you know what? I've reflected and you're right. You were right. Well, then what do you think? The guy's awful then? Like what, how can it's a lose-lose situation. It just doesn't make any sense. Like what is your standard that you're trying to get across? What sort of teaching are you trying to do here with this stuff? I just think it's brainless at this point. I think a lot of his methods are brainless. I think he's just this like guy that just goes down this rabbit hole, and I'm not sure that there is a carrot at the end of it sometimes here. I just think it's just, I'm just going to create a level of chaos for the sake of chaos and things happen. It's like, I'm not sure if that works. And, you know, when he has quotes like this, that he loves when the players just disagree with him and all, it's like, yes and no, but, you know, wouldn't it also be productive, John, if the player recognized what you're saying and what the problem is and say, yes, you know what, coach, I'm glad you explained that to me. You're right. I got to do that better. Like, does he not want that? He prefers they just say, fuck you, you're wrong. Like, what is this?
How about you as the coach and you and the player get on the same fucking page and try and cooperate and get to a better situation and try and win hockey games? Or be like, oh, I love when we're fucking fighting like it's goddamn BDSM or something. Yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah. Thank you, Dan. Thank you. That is what you need to be doing. Like, there are going to be disagreements. There's going to be fighting. It's like, yes, I'm sure. And that's all healthy. And that's a good thing. But at some point, there's reconciliation here. At some point, there's like saying, yeah, you know what? I understand now. Like, we need to go in this direction. And we're all on the same page going this direction. It's not just a constant battle of, I hate this guy. He hates me. He's wrong. I'm wrong. Like, that gets you nowhere. And that's what I think he's trying to breed here.
That doesn't bode well for their perfect little culture either, that everybody fucking hates each other, apparently.
The next time you come into my office and yell at me, don't call me coach, call me daddy. Fuck you, daddy. Yeah. I need ice time, daddy.
Yeah. It's like, this was...
it is weird. He wants these guys to, like, if you just sit there and take it, then you're a pushover and you're a fucking loser and he doesn't even want you on the team anyway. But if you argue with him and go into his office, and he even said it in this press conference, when a guy comes into my office and slams his hand on the table and demands an explanation and why he's not on the power play or why he got his minutes cut and this and that, he's like, I love that.
Which is what the story was with Morgan Frost when he got a thing. When the Frost went in and demanded answers for why he was benched all the time. And then he got a little bit more leash for the rest of the season.
So when he benched him the last game of the season, he was fully expecting Morgan Frost to go in there and swing a chair at him.
Yeah.
And fucking like, oh, now he really loves me. He really gets it.
I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, what does he want the players to do? Okay, so you want a player to go in your office and say, you know what, John, I'm going to sit here and fucking insult you. You are a brainless, dumb fuck who doesn't know what the fuck he is doing. You shouldn't be coach of this team. In fact, I'm going to advocate that you get fucking fired. Like, is that what he wants?
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of environment that he is creating, you know, like, it's just crazy. Oh, this was kind of a funny quote, too, that he said in relation to the Couturier situation. Torch was critical of Couturier's agent, Eric Lupien, who spoke to The Athletic after Couturier initially was scratched. And Torch said he gets to pound his chest. Some little pissant out there pounding his chest that really doesn't know what's going on with Sean and I, Tortorella said of Lupien. I get he's trying to protect him, but it turned into a situation where I get he's the captain and all the timing of it isn't great, but I'm not going to, the captaincy isn't going to stop me from holding people accountable. And if I determine that other players are playing better and it was going on for a while, Sean had struggled for a while prior to that, I'm going to make that call.
Yep.
That was pretty interesting and funny.
He's the boss. Whether you like it or not, he's the boss. And that's the weird thing about this whole dynamic, that I think that this Couturier-Torts thing is going to be something to watch for next year.
Yeah.
Because John Tortorella even said at that press conference to end the season, somebody questioned him. I don't know if it was Charlie O'Connor or if it was somebody else, but he basically said, you know, did you overuse Sean at the beginning of the season? Did you ride him and grind him to the point where he was worn out and then he warranted the benching when he did? And John Tortorella's response was, listen, if I cut the guy's minutes to 12 minutes in like November, he would have been pissed off at me then too. And I get it.
It's true.
And it's like, he's right. But it's like, again, he said something like, look, the benching happened and it is what it is. But he didn't overcommit to saying he wouldn't do it again. He's like, and you know what? Next year's next year. And you know what? Who knows? I might have to bench guys next year, too. I don't fucking know. But it's like basically like, wow, like this. I don't know. It just, I got the sense that him reacting and saying that, making it perfectly clear that he did communicate to Sean Couturier, Coots is wrong. Coots doesn't know what he's talking about. And he went and he was upset that day. So he might have lashed out in anger and said that he didn't understand and whatnot. But I did talk to him. And you know what? How is that going to be? You know, now that tennis ball has been volleyed back to Sean Couturier.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, now what's his response going to be? You know, I don't know, man.
This is the exact kind of shit that's going to cost Tortorella's job one day. It's just, he's stirring the pot too much and pissing everybody off. And
it should.
Like, everyone's going to mutiny sooner or later. Why the fuck are we taking it from this shithead? So just give up on him and the whole of the culture falls to pieces and it's going to cost Tortorella his job. You can't poke the bee's nest forever. You can't intimidate your players forever. You can't openly disagree with them forever. You can't ask them to burn you with cigarettes all the time. Like, you got to fucking leave your kinks at home and be a goddamn coach when you need to be a coach. And his methods, this is the archaic shit that just, I don't think is going to fly long. This is why these veteran coaches have shelf lives anymore, because people don't put up with it forever. It's cool at first. He's clearly got a lot out of his guys. But when you start doing this and start fucking with people, and they're going to give up on you sooner or later. And when one gives up on you, they all give up on you. We've seen that from these shitheads before. You know, it's just, I don't know, man. I don't like the direction this kind of stuff heads in.
It's like, on one hand, I can see why maybe a guy like Tortorella would be good for some young players to kind of, you know, a shock treatment, so to speak. They're just shock them into, you know, becoming men and playing the NHL. And like, there's a little bit of that there that I can see and understand and think there's some value there. But at the end of the day, I just think that this style of coaching is meant to be done on a team, like a team that was, I don't know, the Flyers of, you know, the mid-Drew era, that was just constantly underachieving, that I think had some good players, that they just weren't being squeezed in the right ways. And you needed somebody to come kick their ass for, you know, the next 1, 2, or 3 years to really push them over the top. And I think that that's kind of where a Torts fits, is maybe underachieving type of teams, and not so much like literal year ones of rebuilds. It's just a square peg, round hole. I'm not sure that it fits very well. It wouldn't be how I would approach this. If I was in the front office, I would not have this guy in there right now. I mean, I do a lot of things differently, but I'm just not seeing like the benefit when it comes to some of this, just, you know, creating a culture of, I don't know if it's a culture of misery, but a culture of hating the coach, and a culture of just saying, I don't know what the fuck this guy wants. And a culture of being angry at one another. I'm not sure that is the way to go.
See, like, for a team that was having success and out kicking their coverage, John pushed a lot of buttons. What happens if next year the team comes out and is like, I don't know, at the All-Star break, they're like 8 games below .500. How many buttons is he going to push then? Are those buttons even going to work? Are these guys just going to tune him out? Like, what? Like, where do you go from here? In a year where they were exceeding expectations, and he was constantly fucking benching guys, pushing, scratching guys, shifting guys' line combinations, getting into it, doing things to guys to make them come into the office and yell at them, to show that they cared. And it's like, what do you do when your team, like, if, and again, I don't think they're going to start slow. I think Torts puts these guys through the ringer at training camp, and they'll be like the best conditioned team in the Eastern Conference, and they'll get extra wins just based on that alone. But what happens if they start slow? How many buttons can you push? What else can you do? I think that Dan's right in his assessment with that. You people that are not yellers, when they yell, that's when people go, whoa, because I didn't expect that from you. But if this guy's constantly pushing buttons and egging you on and doing this, and it's like, and then next year, then the year after, it's going to be like, fuck off. Like, and I love Torts. I really do. And he says lots of things that I agree with, most of it. But it's like, I can see where the usage of the young players, the over-reliance on the veterans, the constant, you know, pitting, you know, people and things against each other, fights with the media and all that. Great for sound bites, great to get on SportsCenter. Sometimes it's great in a hockey dressing room, for sure. But I think that it loses its luster.
Mm-hmm. You lose your luster, while you go through all that. What happens if they, on top of all that, don't do any major changes during the summer? If they run it back primarily its entirety, and then shit falls off a cliff because of Tortorella, that's an even worse look. The whole goddamn organization comes clapping down again.
It was interesting in Torts's end of the season press conference how he made a comment of, you know, he was asked about the 8-game losing streak and how bad they were in the last portion of the season. And I think during the season, he was kind of, I guess, throwing shade at the players to an extent. But then at the press conference, he was like, he really kind of took responsibility for that. And I think that was a good comment, but I'm also like, I don't know why we're even scrutinizing that. Like, it's like, what does it matter? You know, like it sucks that it happened, but the players clearly were quitting on him at that point. I mean, you know, if you watch some of those games, I mean, these guys were just doing this, like, the dumbest shit. They weren't skating. They were constantly out of position. They were doing basically everything wrong for like weeks on end. And like, I'm not sure, like, is that something, I think it's like a collective failure at that point.
Yeah.
Where you're just not getting the coaching. The players aren't responding. Maybe they're too tired. It's just, you know, a totality of circumstance type of thing. And I'm not sure if there's anything the coach can really do differently at that point. I don't know. I don't know if he even has to at this point, you know, given what this team is and where they should be. Was it even matter what he's saying at that time? So I don't know. It's just kind of a confusing end to the season in terms of who's to blame and what a coach actually could do differently at that point, given what he had done all season up to then.
I don't know if I'd say quitting. That's been something that's been bandied about, that the players quit on Torts. And I don't know if I agree with that. Maybe I understand what the logic is and the meaning behind it, but a quitting is like what happened to Alain Vigneault when he got fired. When players just, they were getting blasted 9-1 and all this. And I know some of those scores were lopsided. I would take it more as it's like, you've got a playoff spot and you've got an 8-game stretch where you're playing shitty teams and you're supposed to win. And then a guy like a Morgan Frost would sit there and go, you know what? I don't really have to back check. I can fuck around and play around with the puck and try to razzle dazzle and try to do something. I'm not going to stick to the game plan that we've all been doing all year. And I could see a Bobby Brink doing that. And I could see a Joel Farabee doing that. And I could see lots of other guys doing that. I could see a guy even like Nick Seeler going, fuck, am I going to jump in front of the Seth Jones slap shot and block it? Do I really have to? Like, we just need to win like 2 of the next 8 games. And these guys that we're playing, Columbus, Montreal, all these shit fucking bird of a teams. Do we really have to jump in front and block shots? Do we really have to offer protection to the goaltender? Do we really have to do these things? And that's where they got burned. And to me, that's a mental thing. And that shows you that some of these guys aren't worth sticking around. And that's why I don't think that the leadership on this team is everything it's cracked up to be. Because real teams don't let it get to that point. And they say no. Yeah, they have pride and they want to win hockey games, and you don't let up until you clinch that spot. And they didn't. They were fucking around and they got caught.
Yeah, I don't think they quit on Torts. I think that's too extreme, but I think the boat was pretty violently shaken there for a little while.
Sure.
You know, I think it was just that 8-game losing streak, I think, was just a microcosm of everything that they struggled with all year. The power play being shit, the defensive injuries, the goaltending fell apart. It was just everything came together, and then it just so happened to be right after Tortorella benched Couturier. And they played 2 games without Couturier. They went 1-0-1. You know, those games, it wasn't until he came back when everything changed. So I don't think they gave up on him because of that. I just think that they were rode too hard, too fast, went into the year, and they were fucking tired because this 82-game playoff schedule is bullshit. You know, we got to work our asses off from October. No, you don't. That's why you didn't make it. That's why the injuries popped up, because no other fucking team does this. Because good teams don't have to play fucking hard in October. They can just make it work and squeeze into the end of the year and save all their energy for the playoffs. I think that's the symptoms of what happened more so than the players giving them on Torts. I don't think that happened. At least not yet. Maybe one day, but I don't think they steered into a legitimate mutiny yet. I think they avoided that for the most part.
Didn't Nick on the Nick and Katie show, they mentioned something about, Konechny said something about in his exit interview that the team basically stopped playing on Tuesday nights and they picked games
something
that,
like that. Yeah.
They wouldn't give a full effort. And it's like, yeah, That's why you assholes missed the playoffs.
Yep.
That's the culture that we have in that locker room. That's the team that the players that these fans want to live and die for. You pay your hard-earned money to go see them on a Tuesday night against Nashville, and then you got guys that half-ass it. And
it's only Tuesday in Nashville. We don't have to play hard tonight. Yeah. And it's only Chicago at the end of the season. We don't have to play hard. And then you get lose 5-1 and lose a playoff spot because of it.
Like you want culture. Like, the Nashville Predators are in the playoffs. Do they know who they're playing yet?
Probably.
Edmonton?
I don't know. Let me check.
No, I think Edmonton plays the Kings.
Yes, I think you're right.
Nashville is playing Vancouver.
Right. So that's right. They're playing the Canucks. You know, Nashville was a team that was meandering its way through the season, and they had this big epic trip planned to go see U2 at the Sphere in Las Vegas as a team trip, and they got blown the fuck out by a team, and management and the coaches said, you guys are not going to fucking to Vegas to that concert. Fuck you. Until you guys learn to play a game the proper way, you guys aren't going. And you know what? They went on a crazy run, and Roman Josi should win Norris Trophy, as far as I'm concerned. The Nashville Predators went on a crazy run, and now they're in the playoffs. Freaking Ryan O'Reilly's had like this career resurgence since that happened. He looks incredible. Like, guys on that team are playing their guts out because they together said, you know what? We weren't taking it seriously. We were all looking forward to this trip. We weren't actually looking forward to playing hockey and being a good team. And it smartened them up. That's the stuff I like to hear about and to read about. Not the stuff about, the culture, we all love each other, where it's all great. We all go to baseball games together. We're all going to take pictures by the pool eating chicken fingers and Coronas. Great. Who cares?
But nobody pays attention to their teams. They don't know that. And they just drink the Tortorella Kool-Aid and pretend everything is great, even when it's not.
It's the human centipede. Danny Briere edition.
Yeah.
Somebody sewed up to Danny Briere's asshole and just... And then everybody else in the media and everybody else of the followers, they're all like, yes, we agree. We agree with everything that's happening. He's cooking. He's cooking something up
Let
at
him
the trade
cook.
Deadline.
What a masterclass.
Yeah, masterclass.
He's cooking up the Nick Seeler extension.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, that was a real hard negotiation.
4 years, 2.7 AAV. It still pisses me off. Every time I've been cap friendly and see that number, I'm like, what the fuck were they thinking? He blocks shots. So let's give him $3 million a year for 4 years.
It's a bit much.
Jesus Christ.
And a no trade. Doesn't he have a no trade?
I think so.
Good God.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Partial.
Those negotiating with the Flyers must be like an agent's.
He's got a full no trade for the first 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
All right. My client wants $5 million for 5 years. Oh, I'm sorry. We were thinking like 3 years and $3 million. Okay. So, you know what? Why don't we meet in the middle and you just throw in a no trade clause? All right, done. I guess that's as far as we're going to go. Obviously, we were going to give you no trade anyway. So, you know, you didn't even have to ask for it. We were already willing to give you that. So, you know, there you go. You had us over a barrel, you know, you went and you got it. You had all the leverage. Oh man. What a dream. To have a negotiation with that front office.
Yeah.
I had a question for you guys. And yep. It's about culture and about this off season. One of the reporters, I think it was Charlie O'Connor, said that they kind of focused on Garnet Hathaway and bottom six guys for the culture and to kind of address and make this team competitive. Do Jones and Briere double down on culture this off season in order to try to make the playoffs next season?
Yes.
Do they go back for round two?
Yep. I would expect nothing less this year than a Nick DeLaurier 3.0 and Nick Seeler 2.0 on this roster. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I believe it.
Like in terms of acquiring somebody via free agency or trade.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think it's much more likely than not that that's the direction they go. Yeah, I think that they're obsessed with trying to just constantly repopulate their bottom and mid-tier players, especially bottom-tier players. They are trying to just hammer that home at any chance that they can get. And largely, those are the easier things to fill. I mean, there's not that much of a competition for these guys, especially if you're willing to overpay, which the Flyers historically have done for that type of player, and they'll continue to do most likely. And yeah, I think that that's definitely on the table with these guys, with this front office, but hopefully not. I mean, it's possible that we get, Briere satisfied with what they have. And he says, look, we're going to be vying for these first line players. And that's kind of where his focus is. But, you know, that's going to be tough to do.
What's going to be like the biggest warning sign that you're going to look for in this off season? Like, what's the thing that is going to confirm like some of the worst fears about this front office?
A lack of a legit top six forward piece. I think that I would love, them to redo everything, but at this point, just if they don't even attempt to find any piece of offensive talent, if they just sign a Garnet Hathaway clone and that's the totality of their offensive moves, that is a huge problem. And they just run it back, hoping Frost and Tippett continue to get better naturally. That's a not great start.
Yeah, that's probably where I stand too.
So for you guys, it's all about top six talent and offense.
Yeah, I think it's trying to make a play on that, because I want to see them do something that isn't just, well, we're going to see who we get at 12 this year and who we get at, 28 this year, and how they develop over the next 3 to 4 years
from now. And,
I want to see something more than that, like an extremely aggressive type of trade, even if it ultimately ends up failing. But the fact that they're trying something packaging 3 first round picks and Joel Farabee to the Ducks for Zegras or something like that, at least hearing
whatever it takes to get that job done. Yeah.
Right. At least I think hearing that stuff. But I think if there's no even rumors or reporting from the insiders that they're trying to do that, and it's just a depth move, and they just stay kind of, where they're at in this draft and next year, then, I think that that's just going to be really miserable and just not inspiring, from the front office. And that would, really reduce the confidence level in what they're doing here. But I could see him do it because it's the easiest thing to do.
Yep.
The easiest path is just fucking sit there and just do nothing or just take the low-hanging fruit.
We tried hard this year. We just need more Garnet Hathaways to get us back to the playoffs, and then we'll be just fine.
That is a 100% feasible stance I can see them taking heading into the year here. And man, that's gonna suck.
See, and for everybody that is out there comparing and contrasting Briere with Hextall and Fletcher, those are the same types of things that those two guys did. The bare minimum. The easy ones. Anybody can go out and say, I'm going to convince Garnet Hathaway to come here. How many teams were out there looking for him? I'm sure there was a few. But when you get a team like the Flyers, give them that much money, when you got no trade clauses being given to Nick DeLaurier, of course he's going to fucking go to the no trade. Because nobody's going that far to get a guy like that. Mm-hmm. So you'd be crazy to say no and to not go and get that. But that's the easy thing. And that's the thing that drives me nuts is everybody wants Danny to be different and to be this wunderkind. And again, it's like, yes. So show me. Do something difficult. Make a decision that, might not be popular in the short term, but ultimately is going to get you much respect, not only in Philadelphia, but around the league, and plaudits for what you're doing, for going against the grain and doing the hard thing. If he went into that trade deadline and didn't stop at Walker, and he said, listen, I know we're in third place and I know we've got a playoff spot, but we can get a first round for Scott Laughton. See you later. move on. You know what? Nick Seeler wants a, you know, a, we're re-signing him or whatever, we're negotiating with him. And I get it. But at the same time, you look and you've got Ginning, Addard. You've got other guys in the pipeline that you could throw minutes to and see what you've got and be further ahead and get something back. Now, granted, you wouldn't have gotten a lot for Nick Seeler, but that's the kind of thing, like that's the kind of big balls that everybody claims Briere has. That's the type of decision that I want to see from him, where he can go and say, you know what, I know that I probably just submarined our playoff hopes, but that's okay. This season was never about the playoffs. And if he would have said something like that and did something like that, I would have been all aboard. I would have said, look, this guy knows what he's talking about. This guy's actually talking the talk and walking the walk. But instead he did the easy thing. I'm going to get rid of Walker. Cause let's face it. Walker's demands, they were ridiculous. He wanted 5x5.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's like, give me a break. That's not happening.
Yeah, we'll give it to him this summer. Don't worry about it.
Right. So in other words, that made the decision. That made the decision easy for Danny. Again, it's an easy decision. See you later. I'm trading you. I want to see more. My biggest warning sign, though, is if they sign in free agency a 30-something-year-old defenseman. That's going to be my big one.
Yeah.
Because
after having that press conference and saying, well, we expect Andre, Addard, Ginning to compete for a spot and seeing how packed it is right now, like, is that an indicator that Zamula might not be back? He raved about him in the press conference. Like, the numbers don't add up. Who's coming in and who's not coming in?
So they got... Sanheim, Drysdale, York, Seeler, Zmul is an RFA, Risto, Andre, Addard, Ginning. That's nine. Nine
right.
Fucking defensemen.
Yeah, so the last are going to be competing. They're not going to be big.
Competing.
It,
like
they competed for it last year.
Ginning and Andre both end up back in the AHL again.
Yeah, two of those guys for sure aren't making it.
Yeah, and
one of those guys might go back to Sweden.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. They're not making concrete decisions on some of these young guys, and in some ways it's because there isn't enough of a body of work in terms of NHL experience, but at the same time that's your own doing.
Yeah, that's,
that's
their own fault.
They've restricted the body of work themselves.
Yeah.
Fucking self-inflicted lack of information.
God.
It's like, you know, I'm looking at somebody had posted where the Flyers had been. You know, we talk about the first round of the draft all the time and where they had picked over the past 10 years. And, you know, 12th this year, 7th last year, 4th, which is pretty high, 14th, 23rd, 10th, 19th, 13th, 18th. And, you know, like, if you were to look at, you know, that draft position and who the Flyers historically have gotten in those slots, you know, look at the guys on the team right now that were drafted in, you know, that general area. And I think that some of those guys are kind of like generally considered success stories for being picked where they were picked. Guys like the Scott Laughtons and maybe even Joel Farabee, certainly Travis Konecny, I guess. There's probably a few more, but let's say the Flyers just continue to pick in this range. All they're doing in, by and large, the best case scenario, other than, you know, pulling out some superstar, which is extremely difficult later in the round, later in the draft there, later in the first round, all they're doing is repopulating all of the guys, all of the middle six and lower tier players they already have. So, like, that's one thing that I can't get my mind around either is, even in the best case scenario, you're just redoing your guys on your roster now by drafting last year, this year, and next year with your first round pick, sans probably Michkov. But like, I don't understand like that strategy because you're just getting where you're going to be now in 5 or 6 years with this sort of draft position. So I'm not sure if they've probably never thought about it that way or haven't commented on it, but I'm just like, I can't understand what their expectations would be, given that they've already generally succeeded in picking in those areas.
Getting the 12th overall pick this year and replacing, again, all that's going to do is find a semi-decent NHLer, but not a star, to replace one of these guys that they had previously drafted in the mid-round pick, which was just a regular NHLer and not a star.
Yeah.
You're going to draft a defenseman and replace him with Travis Sanheim. It's just like, it's the same thing. You know, you just
yeah, like they're drafting the next Scott
average
at
your
25
mediocrity.
This year. Like,
yeah.
Who fucking cares?
Mm-hmm. Not actually making any progress, believe it or not.
Yeah, it's just really bizarre type of thinking to me. I can't understand. If I was in that front office, I'd be like, where the fuck is this taking us? Where are you going with this right now? Is anyone challenging them on what they're doing? Like, I don't understand.
The entire front office is one giant circle jerk. Like, you know, in during that press conference, Tortorella was the one that noted that the team needed talent. And I thought that was an interesting quote because in my mind, like, he's the one of everybody that's going to hinder them getting talent. You know, Breer obviously has to sign off on the moves, but, like, I feel like Tortorella's got way too much weight when it comes to this stuff. Like, he's going to be the one that wants the Garnet Hathaway clone instead of Trevor Zegras. You know, the idea that he would vouch for something like that seems uncharacteristic. You know, like, he could admit that the team needs talent. I'm sure he's a smart enough guy to realize that, but I also don't believe he's the one that's going to hold Breer's feet to the fire to make him go get that talent that they're missing to begin with. If somebody like Hathaway comes along, oh, we got to get him. We need him for our fourth line, you know, versus, hey, let's go give up what we need to give up in order to get Zegras. You know, I just feel like they're setting the bar way too low for themselves. And there's, you know, Breer's presser didn't do anything to inspire me when it came to adding talent, you know, the desire to add talent or get better. And then there's Tortorella, who just historically doesn't like players having fun and being good in that offensive skill to begin with. So I just, yeah, I my expectations were already low going into the year. I just think it's so fucking impossible anymore to be excited to get my hopes up, because I did it all those years. And like, the thing about Chuck Fletcher, like, when you look back with the benefit of hindsight, he didn't really do anything. But it always felt like he was crazy enough where he could have done something. Like, it would totally feasible that he would have thrown whatever it would have taken to get Alex DeBrincat or sign Gaudreau, you know. Like, Breer, like, I don't feel that way with Breer. I don't feel like this guy's got that killer instinct as a GM to make those critical moves. It doesn't feel like, if Zegras is available for trade this year, that they're going to do what it takes to get him. I don't even have the inkling that they could. You know, if Chuck Fletcher's there, I'd be like, this guy might be fucking crazy enough to get Zegras. I don't feel that from Breer and Tortorella. Like, it just, it feels like they're shooting so low right now, and they're going to focus on the random depth guys because there's just, there's no track record of that. You know, this organization hasn't done anything in 15 years, and I really just don't have any faith in this current front office and coaching staff that they have a desire to add that talent. You know, if they, Michkov falls into their hands in 2 years because they drafted him, and, you know, whoever 12th overall this in a few years because they draft, like, if they get lucky via draft and they've got no choice but to integrate him, it's one thing. But for them to actively go out and pursue a better player, move up in the draft even to get something like that, it just, man, I just don't have any faith that they're going to do anything like that. And I don't know, I'm keeping my expectations low, and then this fucking press conference here took the rest of the year out of those sales, and I'm expecting a whole lot of fucking nothing during this summer. And I hate that feeling. I hate that I can't even get excited at the thought of them pursuing Steven Stamkos or Sam Reinhardt or Trevor Zegras or whoever the hell else becomes available. Zero hope that you walk away with one legitimate top six forward ad this summer. I just don't believe it.
There's no way. I think they'll try. I think they'll dip their toe in the water for maybe some of the younger guys that are in their younger 20s and in their early 20s that probably aren't even available. But
yeah,
you know, they'll probably make some inquiries and stuff. But I don't see that. I don't see the Flyers brokering any sort of significant truly meaningful franchise meaningful trades like that, just because we haven't seen them do it. I mean, why would we think that they're going to do that? And like, there's another point with them, you know, now that we're seeing Danny Briere kind of fall into some of the same mentality issues that the prior regimes had, in terms of kind of just being satisfied with status quo, not doing enough, focusing on the low hanging fruit. I'm wondering if like the Flyers, like they structure, like how their front office works in terms of like, you know, you always hear about like when Chuck Fletcher was here, like one of the things that he said, actually, I think Hextall said the same thing. Actually, Danny said the same thing too. And it's this, is that they didn't realize there was so much non-hockey responsibilities and duties associated with the general manager role. And that's like, you know, not anything to do with the players on the ice, but everything else that's going on with the team and with the arena, with whatever, employees. And I think that is the same with the president's role as well too. And like, I'm wondering if like the way that they just have this thing like kind of structured is that they're so busy with other non-hockey things or non-player things that it's not that they're ignoring the roster or anything, but they might just be de-emphasizing their ability to be creative because they're bogged down with other responsibilities and duties in those roles. And we've heard, like I said, three straight GMs have said that they were stunned and surprised that there was all this other stuff that had nothing to do with the roster that they were responsible for. So I don't know if there's anything to that or not. I don't know if these guys just weren't ready for it, or the way the Flyers have this role structured or what, but I don't know. That could be one of the problems that we're seeing too, because yeah, like I'm not seeing any one of these GMs being a broker on any trade of significance that's bringing in players that can be cornerstones for the franchise. So like, I don't know. I'm just trying to, you know, I'm grasping at straws a little bit on it, but I don't know if there's any legs to that.
Is that a symptom of two of the three of the past GMs being rookies and the third one being a complete fucking idiot in Chuck Fletcher?
It could be, or that they're just like trying to duplicate the roles that the prior guy had in some respect, because I don't know. It's like, with Danny Briere, I mean, he only learned how to be GM from Chuck Fletcher. So that's, you know, I can see why there'd be some commonalities on that end.
Was Ron Hextall president and GM? Did he have both titles? No, Holmgren was GM. They promoted Holmgren to president.
Holmgren was president.
Holmgren was president first, but then I thought that they promoted Hextall where he was both, wasn't he?
I don't think Holmgren was in that role the entire time. I need to look.
No, he retired. He retired. And then I think I'm pretty sure it was Hextall.
It's possible there was like a year or something of that.
Because, I mean, if that's the case, then, you know, 5, 6, 7 years in a row there, the title was held by one person. Well, they couldn't split it up. This one guy's managing everything. And now Keith Jones, this fucking bumbling idiot, is the president of this organization. And Danny Briere, the rookie GM, doesn't know what he's doing anyway. He only learned from his BFF Chuck Fletcher. You know, an inspiring duo right there.
Yeah, like with those guys, and especially with Keith Jones, like, dude, put your fucking mark on the team. Like, don't just sit here and just roll over with all of these, you know, middle and lower tier players. Like, put your fucking mark on
his entire
team.
Gimmick. Step was he wants up. To bring it back to glory here. And your answer with that is Garnet Hathaway? Like, come on.
Yeah, like, figure out how to fucking do that, you know? Like, make some risky trades. Try to create, you know, figure out a way to get some signature players here. It's not fucking Sean Couturier is your signature player. It's not the Scott Laughtons. Like, step up and do it now that you're in the first year or two of being in the role where you can get away with taking big swings and potentially withstanding big misses. You know, like that's my thing with these guys. It's like, what are you waiting for? It's like, now's the time to do it. Like, get creative, figure out a way to make it happen. Don't just roll over with this shit. And I think that they're just kind of like under, like, they're like, oh, we're new to the job here, but we have got this veteran and listen to whatever the John Tortorella wants us to do, and the level of influence that he has, I think, is maybe usurping what a GM and a president should be doing in terms of creating direction for the franchise. So it's just like, I don't know. I feel like there's some problem there, and these guys got to step up as if fucking president GM.
Well, I mean, don't forget, I mean, Danny Briere was the head GM of the Maine Mariners of the ECHL.
Yeah.
You know, when he was organizing bus tickets for
precious
his
experience
team
he got
to go
down
play
there.
To go play up and down the East Coast there.
I gotta make sure we got a full roster tonight. Shit.
Oh shit, the luggage bag is fucking missing. Check underneath the coach bus. Fuck. Oh yeah, no, our Denny's gift cards got fucking misplaced. God damn it.
No grand slams for you tonight.
Yeah, I know. There goes our team meal.
No vacancy at the Holiday Inn Express. Damn it.
Oh, thank God the Howard Johnsons opened their doors. Yeah. It's only a 2-star, but it's okay. It'll do. Only 4 people have been shot and killed in front in the parking lot this year. We'll take it. Beggars can't be choosers, you know.
Yeah, you got all the great experience there with all those incredibly complex trades he made in the ECHL. really wheeling and dealing with the other general managers.
Yeah, I know. Those must have been some great negotiations. Danny, our team might fold. We might cease operations in another 3 weeks. Okay, we'll do you a favor, okay? Can you take this highest paid guy in our team? Just please get rid of him. Here, take him for futures. Okay, sure.